The same religion that's capable of hideous acts of destruction can also be capable of moments of healing, of restoration, and of hope.
But educate a girl, and you educate her entire family.
There is a son within every person.
When that anger sets in, write it. Write the letters, but don't send them. You never want to leave concrete proof of insanity.
It's my great honor to introduce Professor Dave Irvine Halliday. Okay, so he's the founder of the Light Up the World. So the project of the institution is to supply inexpensive, reliable, low-powered lighting systems to homes and schools in developing countries to improve education and the living standards. So please enjoy.
Thank you very much, everybody, for inviting me here. It really is a great privilege and an honor. And to be very, very honest with you, it gives us one more opportunity to hopefully convince some of you that might be able to make a difference in our work and efforts. I'm not sure if you know what namaste means, and if you don't, I'll tell you at the end. And if I forget to tell you, ask me. But it's very, very meaningful. So, Shuji, namaste. Very quickly, maybe I should get that. Just on a lighter moment, excuse the pun, my old University of Aberdeen, that just, by the way, gave me an honorary doc. They'd be rather surprised to see that I got my PhD from Victoria, Australia. But never mind, we won't tell them. Anyway, I just put that in just to show you that there are a few links between Light Up the World and Light Up the World as an organization and me as a prof, because I have my own life, in a sense, at the university. They pay my salary. But because I'm the Light Up the World University professor, it means I teach what I want to teach, which means I teach solid-state lighting and renewable energy systems at the undergrad and grad level. So we'll just, okay. At the end of all of this, I really would like you to just think about that question. I mean, I've already made up my mind with regard to Shuji, and there's no question that, he's one of my heroes, simple as that. Okay, but I also want you to think about other people being that one person that can make a difference. Just a few little quotes here, okay, that may or may not mean anything to you, but they mean a lot to me, and especially this one up here. When I first kind of put it down, I put it down as Light Up the World, Make Poverty History. Then I thought, maybe it's better Make Poverty History, Light Up the World. Tell you the truth, it's a 50-50, toss of a coin. But the reality is, that is what we're trying to do. Okay? We're trying to reduce poverty by way of light. But light also has lots of other positive ripples, as I'm sure you're aware. It's a busy slide, but I'll just concentrate on a couple of the highlights, so to speak. It's funny how light comes into so much of our language. You notice that? We are a market developer. There's no question. Right from day one, it was obvious that, once Jenny and I realized there was a third of humanity that have no access to electricity, and it's probably going to get larger in the future, that you're not going to do this by donation. Okay? You're going to have to do it. The developing world is going to have to light itself up. And the only way they can do that is with the research of Shuji and Steve, et cetera, giving us the kind of hardware that we need in order to do our job. So we're deliberately, and some people maybe criticize us for it, but we're trying to develop the market for the Philips, the GEs, the Osrams, the Crees, you name it, of this world. Because the cheaper they can sell their product and the better quality it is, then the easier our job is. Okay? So just go back just a sec, Jenny. Okay. The one thing that's very, very important, and I will talk about this, microcredit. Okay? It's absolutely essential that if this one third of humanity at the base of the pyramid are going to be able to afford to buy the systems, regardless of how low you get the price, because it's not going to go down to $5 anytime soon. Okay? Maybe $50. Okay? So in order for them to be able to do it, they have to be able to borrow. Okay? And that's what making poverty history is all about. But I hope to show you before we finish that we do have, I think, overwhelming data that shows that the developing world, with the help of microcredit, can actually afford to light itself up. Okay? I won't dally on this very long, but if you look at the 8 United Nations Development Goals, okay, we actually apply to all 8 of them. If you'd asked me a couple of years ago, hey, Dave, what do you think about the, I would have probably said, well, we probably apply to a few of them. But I've had so many people write me about all of them. And the one that I was really surprised at, delightedly surprised, was a doctor and other people from Africa just saying how lighting systems can actually have a long-range positive effect on the spread of AIDS. I'm not showing you this for any egotistical reason. I'm showing it to you in case you've never heard of Light Up the World, and let's be quite honest, the vast majority of humanity has never heard of Light Up the World. Was it a year and a half ago, Shuji? You'd never heard of Light Up the World. So, we're realists. We might be passionate dreamers, but we're realists as well. And I'm just saying that, we have actually had some, pretty decent awards, put it like that, that shows that there's other people out there who really have no reason to give us the awards unless they think we deserve them. And we're we're deserving amongst a lot of other people that deserve them as well. Okay? Oh, there's that man again, I just had to show you that, But it's one of the slides from my class. But seriously, no, Jenny, just go back. I don't think it's any exaggeration to say that the white LED will be one of, the greatest, kind of inventions in the maybe 21st century, because its effect is so kind of pervasive over everything. And anyway, you can make up your own mind on that. For people who don't know much about LEDs or solid-state lighting, it is important to realize that we are talking about very low power consumption, which means very low energy demand. Energy is at the root of everything. I tell my students, one word, energy. From there, you can develop everything else. But if you don't have energy, and if you're trying to get energy when you're in the backwoods of, the backwoods of Africa, I was thinking of Canada. But anyway, if you're in some remote area in India, Sri Lanka, any country in Africa, every joule of energy is basically worth its weight in gold. So the more efficient and the lower power you can get away with, the better. We know they're very long life lived, so whether it's 100,000 hours, we don't really care too much as long as it's more than good enough. They're virtually unbreakable. One of the first lamps we had, I don't have it here, but I dropped it accidentally from the fourth floor in electrical engineering. It went through the railing and I went, oh my God, right down to the sub-basement on concrete. And I thought, geez, that's a good way to treat a lamp. So anyway, took it to the lab, plugged it in, still works. So I was so chuffed, I went back and did it again, But they really are almost unbreakable. I'll talk about this in a wee while, but kerosene, safe lighting. Kerosene's a disaster when it comes to safety and health. More on that later. Okay, thanks. The need. Okay, we've already said that approximately 2 billion people have no access to the electrical grid. Well, most of them use what's called fuel-based lighting. It's kerosene, also called paraffin. Many of them, like in Tibet, it's candles. And there's other things that people can come up with. And there's some bits and pieces of trees and resins and oils, etc. But fuel-based. But fuel-based lighting, it's not only very inefficient, and I'll show you that in a wee while, but it's very unhealthy and very unsafe, okay, and costly as well. The subsidies, 2 years ago when Jenny and I met with the Prime Minister and also with the President of India, I mean, both of them said, you know, we're subsidizing kerosene at something like 50%. It's costing us billions and billions and billions of dollars. With a billion people, it's not that difficult to get to $1 billion. But and we said, well, give us some of that subsidy and let's get the solid state lighting, you know, rolling with microcredit. And you can probably, over the next 10 years, get rid of your subsidies altogether. Illiteracy and poverty, there's no question that they're very solidly linked. And the kind of raison d'etre for Light Up the World in the first place was for children, and especially female children, but not only female children, to be able to study at night. Because during the day, sometimes they do go to school, you know, hopefully, but if they don't go to school very much, they're probably working during the day trying to help their families make a living. Okay? I won't dally for your answer, but we can talk about it during the question period. And I don't mean, oh, I went camping for 2 days and I roughed it with a kerosene or a Coleman gas lamp or something. I mean, have you ever actually lived without electric lighting for maybe, you know, a month or something, so that you really begin to appreciate what it's like not to have light at the flick of a switch? So you can talk about that later. Okay. This is what our COO, Ken Robertson, likes to call the competition, or the Rolls Royce. It's actually a very safe lamp, and just as a matter of interest, I've got a kind of a before and after here. Well, not really. But this is a kerosene wick lamp. This is a kerosene wick lamp. They're actually both relatively safe because they're not like the ones you're going to see in the next slide. Okay? And what we have here is this gentleman and his wife, they don't have electricity, but he's got hold of an incandescent bulb. And there's the wick. This is a tin can. This is basically same as this. If this falls on the ground, you've got a Molotov cocktail. Okay? And that's one of the real problems. Okay. This was taken by my friend Alex Zand, friend and colleague, I should say, in Nepal just this year. And what she's got in her hand is what's called jarrow. And it's basically, it's a little piece of this kind of pine tree that has a lot of resin in it. And it does give it gives a bit of light, obviously. But it also gives a heck of a lot of smoke. And it's a source of danger as well, like burning the house down. Let's just look at the red part. The World Bank estimates about 750,000, you know, women and children inhale the equivalent of about 2 packets of cigarettes a day. I don't know how accurate that is, but I can tell you, when I've been in many of the homes, especially in Nepal, where they have no chimneys, deliberately, I don't think I'd last a year, never mind grow up to be, you know, an old man. This is compliments of Alex, I just got a couple of days ago. This is 3 months. They're not identical lamps. This one has a 1-watt diode in it, but they're identical in as much they're both made of stainless steel. And because the Nepalese in the rural areas do not have chimneys, they deliberately burn their wood to cook, etc., and have their kerosene wick lamps. Because they're normally, you know, there's 2 stories, or 2 floors, and the ceiling is the floor for the other room above. So in order to keep the wood as long as possible, they burn their fires indoors, they cook in the same room as sometimes they sleep, and the creosote and the tars and that from the smoke deposit on everything, and it actually preserves the wood for, say, 40 years. If they didn't do that, they might get 10 or 15 years out of it. But even the old men that I've talked with, they've said to me, they know it's not doing their eyes or their lungs, you know, any good, but there's not a lot of wood. Okay, it's expensive to rebuild a house, so it's a terrible choice. Getting techy for a moment, and just to show you how unfair the world really is, but I don't think I need to tell you that, but I am going to tell you, okay, because I think we all need to be told. The total annual light consumption, now this is from my friend and colleague Evan Mills from Lawrence Berkeley, and we've measured this as well, so we know his figures are really pretty good. The total annual light consumption in a typical unelectrified developing world household is about 12,000 lumen hours. To give you an idea what that is, if you're expecting visitors, you're obviously not Scottish if you leave your garage outside light on all night, but just say you have a 100-watt bulb and you put your bulb on and your visitor comes and they leave and, by God, you forget to switch it off, you know? In 10 hours, okay, given that you've got an efficiency of, just say, 12 lumens per watt, okay, that's 12,000 lumen hours. So in 10 hours, a 100-watt bulb burning is as much total light in kind of quantity as a whole year in a typical developing world home. I mean, it's just so unfair. And to be quite honest, thanks to Shuji and his colleagues, etc., etc., it's not necessary any longer. Big numbers, I won't guarantee how accurate they are, but the reality is that if you go over to solid-state lighting, there's going to be hundreds of billions of dollars saved. And the thing is, for every kilowatt hour that we don't have to use, okay, you can argue about the numbers, back at the plant, so to speak, it's the equivalent of about 3 kilowatt hours that you have to start with. So there's a lot of waste in the system. And again, it gets down to this energy and energy efficiency. Okay. One of our original lamps using 9 LEDs. Okay. Our first villages were lit using little pedal generators and little permanent magnet DC motors. So there's a battery. It's a sealed, meaning maintenance-free, 12-volt, 7-amp-hours. Okay. A 1-watt lamp, if you run the battery right down till it's dead, which you don't ever want to do, by the way, you get about 60 or 70 hours out of it. We take about 20 hours, 15 to 20 hours maximum out of it, so the battery can last for 5 years. But anyway, we also used little induction generators. I don't know if you can... Sorry, Jenny, too quick. This is about 7 feet high, okay? So you don't really have much of a head, maybe 2 meters of head or something. And that is there. That's a 200 watt, not kilowatt, not megawatt, 200 watt. That lit 37 homes, and each home had 3 1-watt lamps in them. I mean, it was heaven for the villagers. A gata, in other words, it's a water mill for grinding grain. Just by replacing the old 1,000-year-old technology with a metal one, with curved blades, more efficient, you can almost double the amount of energy you can extract from the water. So therefore, not only can you grind more grain, but you can put a wee electrical generator on the top of this and wire the whole village. And bingo, you know, you've got a wired city. solid-state technology. Why is it solid-state? Well, you've got a 2x6, you've got a tin can, you've got a piece of bamboo here, you've got an old piece of rubber or plastic tube, and you've got a brick and a half. So it's solid state. Anyway, up to date with the solar panels. This is at about, I think we're at about 12,500 feet here. You know? Okay. Unfortunately, Babu is no longer alive, but when I met him, I was actually on an Everest expedition in 2000, and he was testing our little pedal generators, thinking that, you know what, this could be the thing that we could use in our school. But unfortunately, in 2001, he stepped into a crevasse on Everest and was killed. Just more of the same, only this time we're using a more powerful DC motor. It's actually the motor you use on a treadmill, you know? And it'll top up 5 batteries, excuse me, in about 30 minutes of gentle pedaling. we did some Pico wind turbine work at Everest. It's kind of amusing because show you how thick I can be at times. I couldn't figure out why we had this really windy place, and I was getting so little energy, and then I remembered, oh yeah, that's right, you know, thin air, you know. One of my students from Sri Lanka, a very bright young fellow called Ganesh, he just finished his MSc successfully working on small-scale biomass. This is fantastic. This is from the Gluteusidia tree. It grows literally like a weed. You can cut it right down to like a stump. 8 months later, it's like 20 feet high. The branches are thicker than my thumb. Just chop them up, pop them into this machine. You can see the relative size of that. It's maybe this high. One filling of that will run a 3.5 kilowatt generator for 8 hours. Doesn't take you long to fill that, by the way. So you can get a whole day of 3.5 kilowatts. And in case you wonder about, if you don't know anything about biomass, like me about 10 years ago, you can't burn stuff, that's bad. In actual fact, it's a kind of virtuous cycle, because you're just taking the wood, it's already taking the carbon dioxide out of the air, and you're just giving it back again. Okay, in fact, our very first village in, I believe, in the whole world to be permanently lit was called Tulapokra, and this is the village. And you can see that there's only 6 LEDs in that lamp, because we had to pay for every LED, and each one costs us $1.50, so we started off with 6, you know. Children away in the far northwest in Nepal, there's 6 LEDs, but we very quickly got on to 9 LEDs, because we reckoned it was just significantly better, and also it simplified things. We could now talk about our 1-watt lamp, because for engineers, 9 times 0.1 is, that's approximately 1 if you round up, right? Okay. And same with this lady, again in the far northwest of Nepal. Look at this is her home. You don't get a lot of reflected light from that kind of, kind of wall covering, so to speak. Okay? This is very important. Sister Regina was treating Ali, one of my interns. He hurt his ankle. And I asked her if I could have a look at her operating theater. There are 7 bulbs. Each bulb's 100 watts. 700 watts, which means you've got about 680 of heat and about 20 of light. We took 6 of our 9 LED lamps, okay, which is approximately 6 watts, and Sister Regina, who's a doctor and a surgeon, said, you know, Dave, with just what you've cobbled together in about 30 seconds, I could do 95% of my operations. So we left her a pile of lamps, we gave her a whole pile of LEDs, the local kind of electrical guy, you know, made her new lamps. But LEDs are made, you know, for this kind of work. Yep. You want to see? Oh, yes, thank you. Thanks, love. The beautiful thing, that's why I bring her, because she fills in my... She brings me. Anyway, see this battery, okay, it's a lead-acid battery. It's plugged in just like your cell phone. So with the frequent blackouts, brownouts, you name it out, it doesn't matter anymore, because these lights will be running off the battery, and if the hydro or the grid fails, so what? You know, the battery's still got its energy, and it'll tide you over until the grid comes back up. Thanks, love. This is a very important man and woman, but him in particular. This is a guy called Muni Raj and his daughter Inu. We started a company called Pico Power Nepal in 2000, and Jenny and I owned it for 7 minutes and then signed it over to them. Lock, stock, and barrel. To date, not only has he been very successful in lighting up his homes of his own people on his own, but we've ordered literally thousands of systems from him. So without Muni, who I'm delighted to say just spent the last week and a half in Calgary with us and goes home, unfortunately, to Kathmandu tonight. So, pardon? Oh, sorry, he's going to London first. Yeah. See that? Yeah. Corrected all the time. Yeah. Okay, right. Quick story. This is an orphanage. Some of the children were wetting the bed at night, and old Father Abraham said, you know, can you do anything to help us? He said, why are they wetting the bed? Because they're frightened to come down from 3 stories up when all the lights are off. We put 3 of our 1-watt lamps, okay, on the stair landings. Cut a long story short, it was so successful, I got up 4 times the first night just to go to the toilet. You know? Yeah. but it literally changed the habits. We're talking 6 watts. Remember I said about unfairness? That's what I'm getting at. There's no reason why people should be without light. There's no good economic reason. Okay? Just it's this nice little guy. We lit a number of hundreds of homes in Sierra Madres in northern Mexico. Okay? This is not a religious picture, by the way. We're non-denominational. It just shows you what 5 watts can do. This is a huge church. I couldn't throw, maybe I'm weak, you know, a baseball from the entrance and, you know, to the head of the church there. It was just huge, and the roof was just, you know, a gazillion miles away. But putting 1 watt, 1 watt, and 3 watts, it was amazing. You know, you could just see it so well. Just don't try reading in the middle of the pews, you know. I'll talk about this later, but because I've got a quote. But he's the schoolmaster, and this is his one-roomed house. So remind me to tell you about him. Okay. This is when CNN, that's their cameraman, were covering us in July 2004. We were lighting this particular village. That's a little 5-watt panel, but I've got one here as well. Well, this is the queen trying to sort of, you know. In actual fact, I really should doctor that picture a little because it's actually much darker than it looks. It's a digital image, but it really is. And that's a 1-watt lamp. I think it's a Luxeon lamp, 1-watt Luxeon. And it really was, the children couldn't believe how much light Jenny had, you know, with this little lamp. Of course, they didn't have any electricity anyway. This is a safe little lamp, but it's a village that our son Gregor, who fortunately speaks Mandarin fluently, lit a couple of years ago. But look, these people, they spend about $20 a year on kerosene. You know, it sounds like it's 50 cents a week or less. You know, if you're an engineer, it's 50 cents a week. You know? But the reality is they are still candidates for solid-state lighting, if we can get them microcredit. Okay, there's the 1-watt Luxeon, etc. I'm showing you this picture not because, you know, well, not only because of the beautiful children, but because of this little guy that wasn't meant to be in the picture. And I thought, oh, this stupid little thing, get out of the picture, you know. And then I realized I'd already taken the picture. And then it dawned on me, unfortunately, both kids, the human kind and the hairy kind, are responsible for many deaths. Not deliberately, but they knock over kerosene lamps, they knock over candles, because they're kids. But adults do it as well, of course. But in the developing world, you may or may not know that people share their homes, I mean, really share their homes, with especially goats, but also chickens, you know, and dogs and cats, etc. So they can knock over things. This is an orphanage that we've been trying to light for a couple of years, but it's kind of project creep. They keep saying, can we do this, can we do that? And we say, well, we need more money. So we need more money. Yeah. But we're hoping to do it next year. This is our tsunami effort. We ended up lighting 2,000 homes in the tsunami. And this is a package. There's your battery, your lamps, and your panel. Okay. There's the pole that, you know, the panel's on. And you know, the child's getting the lamps from Rene, he's our project manager, and putting the 5-watt panel up. Now, the thing is, when you talk about refugee camps, people say, oh, yeah, they'll only be up for a wee while. Yeah, right. You know, we've got a project that I was mentioning to Shuji a wee while back. There's in the border between Bhutan and Nepal, just on the Nepal side, there's a Bhutanese refugee camp there. There's 104,000 people in it. They've been there for 15 years. They don't have one single, you know, kilowatt hour of electricity. So it's made just for solid-state lighting. This is what you would call a shanty town. Okay, its proper name's an informal settlement. It's in Johannesburg, and it's totally surrounded by electricity, clean water, and sewage disposal. It has basically none of them. There's a few outlets of water taps, but that's it. This is the inside of the home. Okay, this is Paulina, beautiful young woman, personality-wise, etc. Keep going back. Go back, Jenny. And you can see our home. Okay, it's very small. It's much smaller than from here to that wall. Okay, but we lit it up. Okay, the Other way. Oh, is this where you say your other left? Okay. Keep going. That's a 5-watt panel. Do you like my little on a hot tin roof? You're somebody in the back supposed to shout, don't give up your day job, you know? Okay. This is actually quite accurate in terms of exposure. There's a 1-watt lamp, and really, everybody on that bed could read. Okay? And if I can read, that's saying a lot, because my eyes are not that good these days. Okay? But 1 watt can just change people's lives. People hate kerosene. They know how much damage it can do. And we've been in South Africa twice in the last 9 months. And in the the last 12 months, sorry. And our last visit in March, we're just basically almost just about to get on the plane. And Paulina said that, this wasn't the original house. What do you mean? She says, 3 years ago, like about 100 houses, including theirs, all burned down because some kid knocked over a candle or kerosene wick lamp. And the government gave them bits and pieces to rebuild. So they hate kerosene. I don't use the word hate very often. I don't like the word. But they're terrified of it. Okay? And we've got a little microfinance. I was the microfinance bank because I owned the systems. So we got seven families to sign up to pay for the systems in their entirety, including interest. It's going very well. Okay? This I just decided to put in, because if you're anything like me, you have no idea how big Africa is. Okay? And of course, we work in many, many other countries. But I borrowed this. I was given it by a speaker at a conference in Johannesburg. I asked him for a copy. Somehow I got a black line there, which shouldn't be there. But I don't know how to get rid of it. Anyway, look how big it is. And the reason I'm showing it to you is just to help you to appreciate that even if you have the technology, you still have the spatial world to deal with. You know, villages are 50 miles apart, or countries are just huge. I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling. I had no idea that, relatively speaking, Africa was that big. I actually spent, you won't believe this, a month working with the Canadian Army as a volunteer, in Kandahar, Afghanistan, for the whole of January. But I did it for a very serious reason. It's not that I'm stupid. I'm daft. I'm not stupid. But the thing is that it was the only way to really get to know what the needs of the people were and to be able to meet the higher ups and actually get to know, well, at least to some extent, how they felt about solid-state lighting, etc. And working with a number of NGOs, this is a top project. I mean, it's not more important than building roads or stuff like that, but it's a top project right from the highest member in the Canadian Armed Forces, which is General Rick Hillier. He's given it his blessing. And the American Army have also been approached by some members there, because lighting is so crucial to redeveloping a society, rebuilding a society. This is just 1-watt driver circuit with a Luxeon. It's kind of our second generation lamp. Go back. This is basically what we call a light in a box. Okay, you should be able to go and buy a lighting system anywhere. Just buy it. Okay, and then you learn how to put it up by speaking to your neighbor. Okay, and remember, we use lots and lots of different types of renewable energy. And, we use wind, we use hydro, we use solar, thermoelectric, biomass, biodiesel. There's a lot of systems that we're looking at, but by far, the most important to date, and I don't see it changing anytime soon, okay, is good old solar. Because most of that 2 billion people in the world live pretty close to the equator, and they have a very long night, and they also have pretty good sunshine most of the time. And as I'm sure most of you know, because you're techies and you work at Santa Barbara, that solar panels are like LEDs. They live for decades, and you don't have to change the oil or change the bearings. They're a terrific match for solid state lighting. These are approximate numbers. Okay, if we talk about total annual lighting costs, we've got anything from zero, obviously, but let's just start at 20 for these Chinese, okay? You go up to 100 in Johannesburg, 150. You go to Pakistan, 140, 150, you know, right across the village. You go to Afghanistan, in excess of $200 US a year on kerosene. These are all candidates for just buying the systems. Some of them don't even need microcredit. So, to date, the install cost, and I've underlined install cost because I want you to understand that, okay, it's one thing saying, you know, we can buy the diodes, we can buy the circuitry, we can buy the battery, we can buy the solar panel, but that's the factory cost. You have to get it to where you want to use it. Then you have to train people. And then at least in the initial stages, you have to do social impact studies so you can measure what it is you're trying to change. And then you need post-impact studies, then installation, et cetera, et cetera. So if you roll all that in together, okay, our kind of average cost, it's around $100. My CEO will probably say, Dave, put it higher, you know, so you can ask for more, you know. Kidding. Okay. Well, why am I showing you this? You guys know all this. But just to show you how, I think this thing's going, but anyway, to show you how inefficient your gas and kerosene is, you know, it's sort of less than a lumen per watt equivalent. And then incandescent is plateauing at around 100 lumens a watt. And the white is just going through the roof, you know. We're going to be, when I say we, I mean people like me who, you can call me like a system engineer. We're more interested in putting the blocks together to get into the homes. So, we're going to have 150, Shuji, very soon. Again, because we need to be able to look our partners in the eye and say, okay, this Cree or this Philips, you know, Lumileds or this, you know, whatever, they really are as good as they say they are. Because with all due respect, I never believe a spec sheet. And all of you students, okay, if you're just starting into your engineering career, don't ever believe anything you read completely, okay? Obviously, you can trust it to a high degree, but don't necessarily believe it 100%. But this, I have to be honest with you, this is the Lumileds Luxeon. It's a fantastic device from a reliability degradation point of view. It lives kind of forever, okay? These are two of the better 5 millimeter diodes. Totally acceptable for us. And these are the Chinese. Okay. Both of these, by the way, came with a statement that said they had an MTTF of 50,000 hours. But I got an admission from a guy, I have to tell you this, I was telling Shuji, I got a guy to actually admit to me in writing last week. He says, Dr. Dave, our diodes really aren't 50,000 hours. But we have to say they're 50,000 hours because the other guys say they're 50. And if we didn't say it, nobody, if we said what the truth was, like 1,500 hours, nobody would buy our stuff. So I have to admire his honesty. Though it took three emails to get it. 3 1-watt diodes. We've made many different types of medical lamps. Again, just kind of prototypes. Okay. Very quickly. Billions of batteries get thrown away, okay? And just because Jenny loves yaks, because she was at Everest Base Camp as well for 2 months. We put a little yak in there. Anyway, in Nepal, which is a very small country, there's so many batteries thrown away every year. It's actually 300 million. That's a mistake, okay? If you take it's too lighty here to really show you these lamps properly, but if you take a torch like this, it's got 3 5-millimeter LEDs in it, okay? This thing, okay, is basically unbreakable in terms of the bulb. What it does, as you'll see from the next slide, okay, what it does is, this thing will work, okay? The yellow is the incandescent bulb. In 50 hours with 3 good D cells, the torch is dead. 50 hours isn't too bad. That's stretching it a little bit. Let's just say 50. If you take the bulb out, replace it with 3 5-millimeter LEDs, you get basically a minimum of about 10 times an extension of the life of the battery. Okay? In actual fact, it kind of goes asymptotic here, so it's kind of going like this. Rodolfo, my Mexican student, when it got over 1,000 hours, and you could still read it, you could still use it to read, like carefully, it wasn't lighting a whole page, he said to me, Dave, it doesn't want to die, you know? So the point is, just by replacing the incandescent bulb with this little, you know, 3 or 2, whatever, LED bulb, you're creating wealth, and we're in the wealth-creating business, because you're buying 9 times less diode, less batteries. You're throwing away less batteries into the environment, etc. But you're creating wealth. You're also giving somebody a bulb that's not going to crap out when, as they walk back through the jungle, like happens in Sri Lanka, after buying half a dozen bulbs, they get home 6 hours later and 3 of them already failed. You know, it's so unfair. Poor people are poor. They get sold crap. They get sold crap at a higher price. Okay, anyway. supercapacitor. The best we've done, and we haven't done any work on this further on in 2002, but too expensive, but we still continue to twiddle away at it. But with this supercap here, we get about 1.5 hours of kind of full light out of a 1-watt diode. But as the capacitor costs like $30, you know, it was a wee bit more expensive. We can buy our lead acid battery with our social pricing agreement for less than $5, you know, and it's recycled, by the way. Very busy slide. I'm willing to discuss this in detail later, but you can look at incandescent compact fluorescent. We used the K2 because it was the best one we had when we put this together. We'll try it with Cree soon, you know, and the kerosene wick lamp. And you can play around with the numbers, but the reality is, when you come to looking at kind of total system cost, the hardware plus the energy, and remember, you have to generate the energy somewhere, that you end up with, you know, kind of comparisons, you know, with the compact fluorescent, $1.50 per lumen as compared to the Luxane, $1 a lumen, or, you know, 66 cents per, you know, lumen per dollar. Anyway, these numbers can shift quite easy, but the reality is that solid state lighting in rural areas in a developing world is very competitive with compact fluorescent, okay? And you don't need 7 watts to start with. Busy slide. All I'm going to say here is, if you take this torch, okay, and you're paying 20 rupees a week, and you're going through a set of batteries every 2 weeks, in 3 years, you've saved enough money on batteries to pay for lighting your house with the 5-watt panel, you know, the 1-watt lamps, and the 7-amp-hour battery. So it's wealth creating. In Pakistan, where we spent quite some time, okay, again, they're spending over $120 a year on it. If you take 10 million homes, okay, and you switch them all over away from kerosene, okay, the disposable income is incredible, okay. There's like, well, you work it out, you know, it's billions of dollars a year, okay. Busy slide, but what it's showing you is these are the annual, okay, expenditures on kerosene. Here's your one-time solid state, and you've got some little maintenance here. Next slide, love. Okay, so what you've got is, if you take, you know, around about $100 for your system, if you're paying 120 a year, or 80, or 60, or 20, whatever, you know, as per our numbers here, that as soon as you pass through zero, okay, you've paid off your system, and from then on, you're basically free in terms of your light, because presuming that the panel's good for 20 years, just keep it clean, you know, and the LEDs are good for 20 years, okay, the battery is good for 5 years. In Johannesburg, I can go downtown anytime and buy one of my batteries for $10, $2 a year, okay? Some quotes, some of them can bring you to tears at times, but this one is probably the most meaningful because it's the first one that we actually had. The first quote was my own quote, so we ignore that one. But we'd lit our first village, Tulapokra. It was a Buddhist village in Nepal, and I was kind of walking around the village in the dark, and I'd been brought up not to look in windows of people's homes, unlike my wife, you know? And but this time I was actually doing it deliberately. And I could see these people all kind of walking, bustling about, and there's this white light, this bluishy white light of the original, you know, white LEDs. And I had this grin on my face, like, you know, a Cheshire cat. And one of the villagers came out, and I did have a translator, because you have to go through two translations. And he said that. He said a friend of his from another village had come up, and he was just standing going click, 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 click. And he said, a foreigner has come, da-da-da-da. And when he said it to me, I said, what did you say? Like, I heard it, but the translation, I said, ask him again, you know? So he asked him again, he repeated the same thing, so I wrote it down. But in Sri Lanka, where the literacy rate is, if my old dean is anything to go by, and he's Sri Lankan, it's as high, if not higher, than Canada, which means it must be way higher than, well, never mind, you know? Kidding. But it's at least the equal of the United States. But the children still go home to homes where they've got kerosene at night. And when we went into this home, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. We just happened to be passing. We saw this white light. The guy came out to see us. All these children are lying, sleeping. And he said, you know, this is the first time in their lives they've been able to read at night when they come home from school. So it was, oops, sorry. Anyway, this is the CNN thing, you know, when they were doing the village, and Master Satar, the headmaster, that's what he said to us. His home was probably, the room was probably from here to the wall, love? Yeah, and he only had two lamps, that was all, 2 1-watt lamps. He put them up, you know, third and two-thirds. 12 male children, 9 female children for like the 3 or 6 months before we'd come. He said, the improvement in their academic performance was fantastic. Hey, it's the same kids. The only difference is they've got light. And that's what we're here to get your help, to get more situations like this. And these women in Sri Lanka, we've yet to meet a single person that ever wants to go back to candles or kerosene. We've had some complaints. Oh, the thing broke, or they switched this, and that, or the lights aren't bright enough, or they're not focused enough, or they're not broad enough. We can fix all that, okay? There's no question. But when people say, even with our little kind of complaints, we don't ever want to go back to kerosene. This is a slightly out-of-date chart, but it's good enough for, you know, for you guys. Only kidding. Okay. Oops, sorry, Jenny, go back. Sorry. The ones in red are where we've got real good going projects. And the reason I tell you it's out of date, I was talking to Fuji earlier. I gave a presentation at MIT a couple of weeks ago, and I blithely stated, oh, we're in 26 countries, and what I mean by 26 is we have real good going projects. Okay? We have lamps and systems in many other countries, but they're just kind of demo. So until we actually have a project, I don't count them. Well, I got back to Calgary, and I happened to be speaking to one of our guys there, and he said to me, no, Dave, it's not 26. It's 42. I said, oh, the founder is that far out? You know? But I was delighted. And then a day later, the Light Up World CEO said to me, Dave, it's not 42. It's actually 43. So we're literally in 43 countries, meaning we've got partners, we've got good going projects, and we've gone beyond the, hey, test our systems, see if you like them, and, you know, da-da-da-da. Some of the projects we're involved in, by the way, when I say India, I don't mean this is a project. I'm giving you an idea of the scale of the opportunity for people to create wealth and create companies in order to make solid-state lighting systems. We've got a number of projects with the Dalits, or the Untouchables. There's 180 million of them. There's another similar grouping called the Tribals. There's 80 million. That's a quarter of a billion people who are unconnected to the grid, more or less, like 90, 96, 97%. Many of these people can actually afford, okay, to purchase solid-state lighting systems if they can have access to microcredit. And our goal is not only to try and team them up, because we will never do the microcredit. That's not our expertise. But to team them up with the microcredit, but also, okay, to ensure that, and I had a point there and it just went blank, to ensure that we get the systems made as much as possible in the country, so that you keep the intellectual wealth and you keep the monetary wealth in the country. Because let's face it, I mean, Canada and America are not the only two places where there's some bright people. There's a lot of bright people in India and all over the world in Africa. So let them develop systems building on what we've done. Let them improve what we've done. Then we can take their improvements and give them to other people. You know, we're not proud. We're happy to learn. Okay? But how can you help light up the world? Well, there's lots of ways. Okay? Many of these, we've never actually done them. We've just suggested to them. But, for example, people giving us, transfer staff, you know, to light up the world, to help us with the office and project managers, paid, of course, by your original company, you know. But, and also adopt a home, school, village. A friend of ours at EA, the Electronic Arts, in the States here, he donated $25,000 or something, and lo and behold, EA matched it dollar for dollar. Now, if more companies would do that, it would be, I think, an incentive for people to donate. Okay. I think this is the second last slide, so you can relax. You know, we really do need to get partnerships with many organizations. I'm not exaggerating, and I'm not complaining in terms of feeling sorry for myself when I say that I don't know if there's anyone in the United Nations that know we exist. Okay? Now, you might say, well, why should they? Well, I think they should know we exist. They should know what we're doing, because we definitely have a very good solution. It's not maybe not perfect, but a very good solution for not only bringing, you know, the gift of light to the developing world, but also creating wealth. So they should know about solid-state lighting. And, you know, we've talked to many religious organizations. We know there's a gazillion dollars out there being spent in wonderful ways, but we haven't managed to plug in with them yet. You know, they haven't quite seen the light. You know, but sports media, and this is my favorite, because of all the ones, when I say sports, I mean movie stars and all this kind of rubbish, you know. But the thing is, they should be the easiest to get to. There's a lot of really intelligent people who, you know, play sports, and I'm being serious, okay, play sports, are in the media, and are movie stars, and there's many of them who, as far as we are aware, watching television, listening to radio, reading the newspapers, that they're advocating, you know, developing world, it needs our help, make poverty history, we're building schools, we're giving grants, etc., etc. These people need to know that we exist, because we're in the business of trying to give you a better bang for your buck. Now, to choose one example, Oprah Winfrey. Never met the lady before, but I know she's doing apparently good work. If she is building schools in Africa, let's go back to our Pakistani headmaster, Master Sattar. Do you think these kids go back to homes that have electric lighting? Probably not. So if she would partner with Light Up the World and build these wonderful schools and also finance them so as they have teachers, etc., and books, if the kids could go home to a home that had a Cree lamp, you know, in their house, then I think that she'd get a much better bang for her buck. And Jenny was telling me that she heard Matt Damon or something the other day there saying that he was really getting into the Make Poverty History movement. And Bill Clinton, who's apparently coming here tomorrow, he was quoted in an article, and a friend of mine, Prof at the University of Philadelphia, sent me the article, 29th of August, New York Times. And the last three paragraphs, the whole article's about AIDS and Bill. Okay, the last three paragraphs, he says to his Scottish buddy, Sir Tom Burton, "Hey, Tom, why can't we provide light to the kids so they can read at night, study?" And I'm thinking, Bill, you're on our wavelength. And then the next one says, "And why can't we get these systems built in this part of Africa? And they can serve the whole of Africa." Guess what we do? You know, we help to create companies. You know, Nepal, India, Sri Lanka, totally owned by the local people. Okay? So it's not a kind of a make rich, light up the world deal. Okay? And the last slide. Okay? I really would love, okay, regardless of how small your contribution is, that if each one of you could leave here, if you're convinced that we are doing something worthwhile, okay, and commit yourself to It's just doing one thing that will help us. Okay? I'm not asking for $1 million each, though I wouldn't refuse it, you know? But I'm just saying that one person can make a difference, and all this 6 degrees of separation and everything. We just haven't managed to hit the right chord, the right note, in terms of the contacts that we've had. Because we've been trying for a number of years to reach some of these people, you know? The Oprahs of this world, etc. They're not the only ones, by the way. But there's leaders of industry who like to be seen as green, and some of them are genuinely green. We'd like them to know we exist. Okay, so if we lock the doors, and until you make a promise, you know, you don't get out, you don't get any more pizza, you know, I would like you to think about this. And, you know, if you can't do anything, the base of the pyramid really does need your help. Okay? Namaste.